Before there were compasses and sophisticated navigation equipment, sailors found their way across the seas by following the North Star. And that's because each night, as the Earth spins on its axis and all the rest of the cosmos appears to swirl around the night sky, the North Star remains relatively fixed. It is a fixed point in the heavens. Its position is unchanging night after night, and so seafarers could count on it. Now, over time, the North Star has become a way of thinking about something that never changes, right? Even when everything else shifts and evolves, the North Star, whatever that is for you, will never change. Your North Star, I believe, is your why in life. A few weeks ago, we invited you to consider what your why is. Why is it that you exist right now on this planet at this moment in your life? And we said that if you can articulate that, if you can articulate why you're here right now in 5 to 7 words and keep that in the forefront of your mind, you will be less likely to get pulled off course and get lost in the chaotic waters of life by all those distractions that are around us. Whatever else in your world becomes unstable, your North Star, your why, will always be that fixed point in the heavens that will guide you through it and keep you on track, even with distractions. Well, speaking of distractions, this is the last week of our message series all about overcoming distractions. We're calling it Focus. And over the last number of weeks, we've been looking at one common distraction after another, and we've been seeing how they can cause us to drift in the wrong direction sometimes, and we've been offering a few suggestions about how to make sure that doesn't happen. So far, we've talked about, you know, the desire for money and possessions, the overindulgence in pleasure and leisure, the unhealthy conflicts that consume our time and energy, the trivial preoccupations of the in crowd, and the need for constant attention and praise from others. All of these are dangerous distractions. We've offered some important ways of avoiding those distractions, like intentionally spending less, simplifying your life, serving others, dealing with conflict in a healthy way. And last week, we talked about cheerleading for others, you know, cheering others on and giving them praise instead of seeking affirmation for ourselves. But more than anything else, knowing your why will keep you on track, will help you live a fulfilling and joyful life and avoid regrets when it's time to make that transition into the next life. Well, this week we're looking at one final distraction. And this distraction affects a lot of people. Last week, I told you that the distraction that I struggle with the most is the need for affirmation and praise from other people. But I can honestly tell you that this week's distraction, I don't struggle with it at all. And that's because I'm not a very sentimental person. You know, I don't keep mementos or keepsakes that remind me of the past. In fact, I love to throw things out. My brother, on the other hand, my older brother by 4 years, he is a pack rat. He keeps souvenirs from every trip he's ever been on. He saves party favors from every gathering he's ever been to. He's got postcards stacked up that he's received from people over the years. His bookshelves are lined with school yearbooks dating back to kindergarten. He's got photo albums and other relics of the past that are strewn around his house. He's always been a collector. When I was growing up, he had a stuffed animal collection that rivaled the local zoo. He's had a collection of albums of nearly every 1970s hard rock band you could think of. His room was cluttered with posters and concert tickets and memorabilia chronicling his life up to that point. Many people are like my brother. They have a close connection with the past, you know, and they want to hold on to the past for as long as possible. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, remembering the past can have a number of psychological and emotional benefits. I've been doing some research on this, and scientists have found that nostalgia, the bittersweet longing for the past or memories of the past, can actually be a stabilizing force in our lives. Moments of nostalgia can comfort us when we're feeling anxious and stressed and worried in times of transition, dislocation, or change. And studies have found that long periods of quarantine during COVID-19 actually kickstarted people's need to reflect on the past. During those long lockdowns, many people became obsessed with the music they used to listen to, the books they used to read, and the TV shows they used to watch in their childhood. It was a way of coping with the loneliness. Indeed, by helping us remember occasions of love and happiness in the past, nostalgia can reassure us in the present and give courage for the future. We're better able to cope with adversity and more likely to seek help from other people when we're depressed if we have a little bit of nostalgia to help us cope. Now, I told you I'm not a sentimental person, but I have had bouts of nostalgia. One of them was my first few months in seminary. I was 44 years old. It was just a year or two ago. And did I say something funny? I don't remember. Anyway, I was 44 years old when I when I went into the seminary. And the thing about it, I was an older student, older than most of the other students there. So I had left behind a life. I had a life in Atlanta and where I came from. And when I came out here to seminary, the transition was really hard. I was immersed in a new environment. I didn't know anyone, and I didn't have a support system. And at that time, to make matters worse, most of the students would go home to their own families on the weekends, and I would find myself rattling around this huge mausoleum virtually by myself for several days at a time. I don't know if you've been down to St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park, but it is an enormous building. I used to try to console myself when I was walking those halls by myself and say, wow, I live in a big mansion. But it didn't work because I still longed for my network of family and friends, my church, my neighborhood, my house, my life back home. I was homesick, but somehow the nostalgia got me through it. And you know, even people who are at the end of their lives, on their deathbeds, they are encouraged by chaplains and psychologists to kind of reflect back on the happy memories of their life as a way of transitioning and comforting themselves into the transition to the next life. So the point I'm making is that reminiscing over the past can actually be a healthy thing to do. But there's also a shadow side to nostalgia. Clinging to a romanticized past can be damaging, and it can keep us from moving into a new and happy future where things may be different, but also good. Some people, you know, they hold on to this golden era in their lives. This is called historical nostalgia. They look back at a time in their lives when everything seemed better than it is today. And the older I get, the more I do this. You know, you think back to a time when everything seemed better. Society was more cohesive. Politics was more civil. Family life was more harmonious. Churches were fuller and more active. But insisting that nothing ever changes only dampens our personal and professional growth, and it keeps people from finding a brighter future. An unhealthy attachment to the past is another distraction, and it's the distraction that we're talking about this week. And this distraction of holding on to the past threatens to move us away from where we should be going in our life, towards our why, following our North Star, and it gets us off course because we're so concerned with the past. Think of it this way. When you're driving down the highway in your car, those of you who drive, I'm sure you look in the rearview mirror occasionally, right? I mean, you need to see approaching hazards, drivers who are coming up on you pretty recklessly, or if they're tailgating you, whatever. But if you constantly look in the rearview mirror, you know you're going to crash, right? This is precisely the point that Jesus is making in the gospel reading today. So in this story, Jesus is still on his way to Jerusalem. Apparently, it's a long journey because we're in chapter 14 of Luke, and he left in chapter 9 of Luke. But he's still on this journey, and along the way, he's stopping in villages and towns, and he's healing people, and he's teaching them, and he's loving them like Jesus used to do, and still does. And a crowd started to follow him, and they're walking with him on his journey to Jerusalem. But what they don't know is that that journey is going to culminate in the cross. And Jesus knew that some of those people who were following him would not have the stomach for what lay ahead. They would get halfway there and run into problems. They would become homesick and they would long to return to their former lives. And in fact, many did. So to warn them about this, Jesus turned and addressed them. And he said, "If anyone comes to me without hating his family, mother, father, wife, children, etc., if he doesn't hate his past life, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." You see, he knows that the days ahead are going to be hard. The religious leaders in Jerusalem are going to reject him. Over and over, he will try to convince them that he is the light of the world, the living water, and the salvation for all people. But they will only seek to put him to death. The powers that be will conspire in an unholy alliance to crucify him. And that's why Jesus says that all those who truly follow him will have to follow in those footsteps. They will have to be willing to suffer. Why? Because nothing great ever happens. Nothing great ever happens without a little blood, sweat, and tears. Or maybe a lot. When Jesus says to his followers that they have to hate their families and their lives, their past, he's obviously exaggerating. He's using hyperbole to make the point that in some ways, all people who follow him will have to change. They will have to let go of the past. As people grow in their relationship with Christ, as they grow deeper in their discipleship, they often find that they have to change certain things, to give up certain things in their past, like the way they spent their money, the way they spent their time, the people that they hung out with. Whatever it is, actually following Christ requires you to change and to leave the past behind. It demands a different future than perhaps you had envisioned. In fact, Jesus made this precise point when he first started out on his journey to Jerusalem back in Luke chapter 9. Look at what he says. "No one who sets a hand to the plow and looks to what was left behind is fit for the kingdom of God." Those are tough words, I know. But they're also an invitation to a greater, more significant future. So if you're the kind of person that you struggle with this, if you're kind of stuck in the past, you long for memories to become alive in your present moment, Jesus offers a fix. And that fix is surprising. He says that to uproot yourself or to detach yourself from unhealthy attachments to the past, it requires a ruthless and honest assessment of your past in light of your future. You see, a lot of people are afraid to leave the past behind, even when they know that they should, because they've invested so much in it. For example, maybe you've been in a particular job or a career for so long that you can't imagine switching now, even though you go in almost every day and feel unfulfilled by your work. Or maybe you've been in a toxic relationship, you know, people who are just bad for you, but it's been years and you're afraid to break free of it because you don't know if you can find a new person in your life, a new significant other, a new partner, or a new friend. Or maybe your whole life and identity have been wrapped up in your kids, and now they're all grown up, moved out of the house, and moved out of state. And you may ask yourself, where are you going to find meaning now? Maybe you know it's time to retire, and your kids are pestering you. If you're an older person, your kids are pestering you to sell that big house and to downsize and to maybe move into a senior living center, and you are like, no way. Or maybe your spouse has died, and you're alone for the first time in decades, and you're wondering, how will you go on? The answer, Jesus says, to sit down and be honest with yourself. Look at what he says. He says, which of you wishing to construct a tower would not first sit down and figure out whether you have enough resources to complete it? Otherwise, people are going to make fun of you. Or if you're a king and marching into battle, what king is not going to sit down and figure out, do I have enough troops to win this battle? In other words, what Jesus is saying is think about what it will take for you to move forward into the future, to make a commitment to live the future that God has in store for you. He says to look at the resources at your disposal. You know, when he says at the end of the passage that everyone has to renounce their possessions in order to follow him, he's exaggerating again. What he's really saying is that we all need to consider how much we're willing to sacrifice to track the North Star, to follow that North Star, and to stay on course and not get distracted by the past. But most of all, he's saying, just ask yourself whether you're willing to let the past be the past. In my mid-20s, I met a remarkable woman who changed my life. I was a young man. I was in search of myself. I didn't know where I was going in life. I didn't know what path I would be on, where I would end up. And I was volunteering at a residential treatment program for kids, much like the St. Vincent School for Boys up here in Marin County. And the woman I met, Angela, she was one of the religious sisters who worked and lived there. And over the next 20 years, Sister Angela and I developed a great friendship. Well, one day she called me and she said that her superiors were moving her. They were forcing her to retire. She was in her 80s. And it looked like after decades of serving others with the love of Christ, that her days of ministry were finally coming to an end. And she hated it. And she didn't want to go. And she dug her heels in. And she said, no, no, no. But they made her go anyway. They forced her to retire. And worse yet, she had to move into a government-operated independent living center for low-income residents. Now, after moving in, she invited me over to see the place. And when I first walked in, I was appalled. It was dated and cramped. The paint was peeling, the carpet was dingy, the furniture was shabby. And I said, Sister, how can you live like this? How can anyone live like this? She smiled and she just said in her southern accent, I love it. She was so proud of her little apartment. And then I heard the sound of jets thundering overhead, one after the other after the other. They came about every minute. It was a steady stream of airliners passing overhead on final approach to Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport in Atlanta. And I realized in that moment that her apartment was directly under the flight path of the busiest airport in the world. Even more outraged, I yelled over the noise, Sister, this is awful. She just smiled again and said, oh, it's okay. I said, how can it be okay? How can you even sleep? And I'll never forget the next words out of her mouth. She said, Roger, I go to bed around 7:30. And when I'm lying in bed, I pray for all the passengers on each of those planes as they fly overhead. And then I sleep like a baby. That humble servant of Christ taught me an important lesson that day. Whatever circumstances you're facing, however much you may be uneasy or afraid of what lies ahead, If you're able to let go of the past and embrace the future, it will always, always be a bright one.